But the twist at the end, I'll kind of leave the spoiler a little ambiguous. Maybe people can read between the lines.
Well, let's just pull the whole veil off of this thing.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Ted, we are 3 minutes to nine ahead of schedule for episode 148. I guess we're 3 minutes excited.
We're 3 minutes excited for this big beer. Well, it's not too big, right?
What is 11.6? That's a big beer.
Okay.
That is, yeah, that's going to do a number on us, but that's okay. And I think it's, what, one of those 1.9 fluid ounces. So we got a heavy night of drinking. Let's get this thing open.
What's the name of this? How do you say that?
I'm trying to say Stygian? Stygian Descent?
Stygian Descent? Stygian? Stygian Descent?
Stygiandescent.
Well, Descent, we got. We got Descent.
Yeah, Descent, but...
It's either Stygian or Stygian.
I think it's Stygian Descent. I don't even know what that means. Descent. We should Google
right.
it.
Well, let's cork this thing.
Yeah, uncork it. Uncork it.
Yeah.
I don't want to cork it. It's already corked.
Well, that's like...
I want to drink it.
You know, when you raise a house, you're actually like leveling it to
yeah,
the ground.
Yeah, but it's R-A-Z-E. It's not R-A-I-S-E.
Well, I was spelling it C-O-R-K-Z-E. Oh, no.
Oh, my God. This thing is like... I see you struggling. I'm going to have to go get a corkscrew. Holy cow. We're both like over here. Oh, yeah. I'm going to go get it.
Oh, I got it in my sweater.
Okay, I'll try that. Be a man.
Yeah, the sweater. The sweater did it.
Oh, yeah. Turn it. Oh, God.
Oh, here it is. It's coming.
Oh, jeez. I'm going to go get it.
That is a cork. That is a cork and a half.
Oh, I got to change hands. Oh, got it. I think your forearms are stronger than mine.
Well, I'll tell you why with this when we get into this week.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Come on.
Almost there. It's long.
Oh,
it's a long
there
one.
We
there
go.
There it goes.
Man, that cork. Oh, God. I still got it.
So it is a stone. It's called a Stone Sublimely Self-Righteous Black IPA.
Oh, wow. Oh, you could smell the bourbon barrel.
Yeah.
This is a 2016, man.
2016, aged in the caves of stone brewing in Escondido.
I don't even want to know what you paid for this thing. God.
No, it's all in that same ballpark. They're all $20 beers.
Yeah, that's true. So what do you think?
It's a strange... It has like a... Almost like a peppery, like a spiciness to it.
Not at all what I would expect from an IPA.
Right.
I would put it in the ranks of like a hoppier porter.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I lack the vocabulary of your beer knowledge, but I was thinking something along those lines. And I think when you say black IPA.
Yeah, it's not quite a stout.
Yeah, when you say black IPA, it's like a porter.
I've brewed black IPAs before. Essentially, the way I've done it is I have a stout grain bill,
uh-huh.
and I use IPA hop schedule.
Okay.
So you're going to do a 90-minute dogfish head hop schedule, let's say, just as an example. And then you're going to do like a old Rasputin grain bill and just kind of mix the two. And that's what I was expecting from tonight. But maybe it's the bourbon barrel. Maybe they don't have a lot of hop. Maybe they just have a lot more grain. I don't know. But whatever they did, it's extremely... I like what you said. There's spice to it.
Yeah. And here's an interesting descriptor on the bottle. They have... I thought it only had one type of hop in it. It says in the boil, Chinook hop.
Yeah.
And in the whirlpool, Amarillo and Simcoe.
Whirlpool. I'm assuming that's their dry hop. I'm not sure, but.
Ah, that's the dry hop.
It's probably dry hopped. And the dry hop puts it more on the nose.
Yeah, that's Simcoe. I love the Simcoe and Amarillo. Some of my favorite next to the.
Yeah, I see here. And they even tell you what the mash is. Caramel.
Right. Pale, caramel, and craft. Three malts.
What the three means, and so on, that's like the way they roast the grain.
And it says says Templeton Rye Whiskey Barrels.
Yeah, it's probably a higher roast when you have like the three versus a two or something.
Oh, it's very nice.
Yeah, it's amazing, man. Thank you. I appreciate it kindly.
Ah.
All right, let's jump into the show and let's get...
Yeah.
Well, if you're weak, mine's kind of quick. If your week's a bit heavy, so...
Well, you know, couple notes.
Couple notes, yeah. Couple tasting notes from the week. Probably the big news this week, I got the Little Free Library done.
I saw that. That was so cute with the boys out there reading their books next to the library.
Yeah, yeah. So... We have our charter number and everything. We're not on the map yet. I guess they take a couple days to vet you out to make sure it's actually like a real deal or something. I don't know, but
legit.
Yeah, legit. But yeah, so we have the thing out there. I put a little they call it like a rope clasp or something, or I forget, but it's like a metal hook essentially. And I put that on
to the latch it, right?
Yeah, so people can like wrap up their dog's leash and they can browse hands free if they want to look at it. I put a guest book in there with a little note saying thanks for visiting, you know, leave a note or a suggestion, whatever you think. There's hand sanitizer, there's masks in like a baggie. There's dog poop bags. I put some people for bike stickers in there. There's books of all ages. My neighbor across the street, I had it in. I had it all set up, and I walk up to the house to start to go get books. I walk back down. Boom. There's a book in there. I'm like, where the heck?
Oh, he's already got a book in there, huh? From other people.
Yeah, my neighbor pulled up. He saw it. He went in, got a book. Guy's 90 years old. He walked in, got out. Came out, put the book in, goes back home. I was gone literally like 25 seconds. I'm thinking, this guy's like...
He swooped in.
Oh, man, this guy's so fast. You know, there's like a 90-year-old, like, runs like Superman. But he puts in Bill Clinton's My Life. That's the book he puts in there. I'm like, okay, you know, whatever. It's kind of a little older, but that's all right.
Hey, you know, it's what he had. It's what he has wants to, you know, spread in the world, so it's fine.
Yeah, so then it's all ages. You know, there's adult books, kid books.
I actually saw that book and I was like, oh, Jimmy's getting a little political with his.
Nope, that was our first donation, actually. Not even one of mine. I don't own that book. I've never read it. I told him, I said, maybe I'll read it too. Yeah, so there's that. And then, I don't know, there's like, I think I put Upton Sinclair's The Jungle and The Red Badge of Courage. And I don't know, there's a number of books in there. But I also did, the paint scheme is the same as our house.
Oh, nice.
As I was like mounting it and leveling it and getting it all in place, somebody, you know, a couple comes walking by with their dog. And the first thing they say is, oh, it looks just like your house. And I said, imagine that. You know, so they validated my plan, you know.
Awesome.
So yeah, and I did it a little bit more like Tudor style though, with the little wood slats and everything.
It looks great. Looks great. Looks very professional.
Yeah, it was, you know, I've been working on it for like 3-4 weeks now, so it's been a little project in the making and stuff, and to have it done and out and open for business as of yesterday afternoon.
In the world.
It's funny too, like I'll be washing dishes and it's like I have a line of sight right to it. It's right in front of me, more or less at the street. And you know, people come walking by and I see people like they look at it and then they like scurry past really quick. Or some people slow down and like you see out of the corner of their eye, they're kind of like looking, but they don't like want to look. And then they look, they give
they
like
don't a get caught looking.
They give like a quick look and they look back and they like, I'm just like, people, it's not like if you look, it's not like I have a camera in there. Like, I don't, it's just so.
Like the Truman Show.
Yeah, but it's so funny watching people like interact with it early. Like they don't know what to make of it.
Right.
It's awesome. It's kind of comical, but anyway, that's that. So how was your week then?
My week was, like I was telling you in the green room, it was busy, busy week. Work was normal, I would say. But we have a new physical activity. We have a new exercise routine.
So this is the family, or is this you at work, or what? Like what?
No, so it's me.
Okay.
And Bryce.
Oh, okay.
So last weekend I was like, I need to change up our exercise routine, and Bryce didn't want to wake up in the morning to go running or.
Now, what's the wake up call?
Work without the weights. What time?
Yeah.
Like, 6 o'clock, 6:30.
Okay, and let's assume he wasn't going to do that and just went straight to school. What's the wake up call?
Eight o'clock. So the wake up call for school is 7:30.
Oh, so wait, 7:30, and he's on at school at 8?
Yeah.
Holy cow, that's not much time to get the crust out of your eyes.
Yeah, because I mean, we get him up at 6:30, and then it takes him a little time to get up, and then we're usually out exercising by 7.
Like, does he get breakfast and all that?
Oh no, we do a smoothie, and we get the smoothie while we're working out. The sheep man makes the smoothie while we're working out, and then we drink the smoothie right during our first classes.
Oh, okay. So then there's no like standard oatmeal and eggs or something.
I think it's a 15 grams of protein smoothie.
Yeah.
And it has oatmeal in it. It has the fruits. It has everything we do.
Now, would you do that with like a blender?
Yeah. Yeah. We have our Vitamix. When we went cross country, we traveled with the Vitamix.
We pureed
everything. Yeah. It's got a whole serving of greens, a full serving of oatmeal, a full serving.
Oh, okay. Okay. So it's pretty calorie dense.
It's about anywhere from 350 to 450 calories.
Oh, that's a standard breakfast.
And then it's about, you know, like I said, 15 grams of protein.
And what kind of protein? Like whey protein or something?
No, it's like hemp hearts and yogurt and then a bunch of other stuff in there. And then when we're out of yogurt, we did a little peanut butter. There's a peanut butter there for the protein.
I bet that tastes good.
It's all right. It's different.
Yeah, yeah.
So we get Bryce up. And I was like, this week we have a new activity for exercising them. I got an axe last weekend.
You're splitting wood.
We're chopping wood in the morning.
That's like Rocky Balboa training, man.
And it's so funny because all Ann sees is just like danger. Like you're just going to chop a finger off. Somebody's going to get angry and go get the axe. And
well, how are you going to chop a finger off when you're holding it with two hands?
Well, chop somebody else's finger off.
I can see you like missing and hitting a shin or something.
Yeah, exactly. There's that. But I will tell you that, you know, we've been chopping wood all week long. And the only person that's been hit
is you.
Has been. No, Ann. Ann got hit twice.
How does that even happen?
And she was just, it's the axis at which she stands, I believe. She stands about 90 degrees off to the side of it.
Oh, the wood comes flying off and whacks her.
And the wood flies, the wood flew like 10, 12 feet off the side.
So do you have an axe or a maul?
We have just an axe.
Just an axe, okay.
So everybody's like, get a maul and a sledge and do it that way. I'm like, no, just get the axe. I'll see how much that does.
No, but like I have a maul uh-huh. that's in the form of an axe. So it has that like wider shape and stuff. So when you come down, it really splits right. it. So you do have the axe swing.
Right.
But you're not like setting up like a maul, like a chisel.
Right.
If that makes sense.
This has a decent wide body to it. So once you get it into there, and it's so funny, the first couple of days, you know, we were a little tentative about it.
Are you on like your little pedal sharpener with the grinding stone and all that?
No. If we need to sharpen it, we'll bring it over to Frank. Frank's got a great grinder for all that sharpening stuff. It's pretty simple edge. But this thing was super sharp. But we were tentative the first couple of days, and Bryce was, you know, and Ann's thing was, it's not a workout. And I'm like, BS is that a workout? That thing is a workout.
You split wood. I mean, I split a bunch of wood. We had a big tree in the back, and I split a ton of the wood, you know, by hand, like I said, with the maul. Whew, man, it's like the conditioning that goes into something like that is intense, man.
And I was like, even though we're only going for like half an hour, I get Bryce on a nice size block of wood, and you know, and I said, you know, when you whack it once or twice, if the axe gets stuck in there, the best way to get it unstuck is to just smack the wood on there, and one of two things will happen: the wood will fall off, or it'll drive it deeper, and then you can just really keep going,
or it'll split,
and then you're out anyway.
Yeah.
So he's like doing that on the regular. And I said, the only rule about when the wood is on the axe is that you don't lift it over your head. You just keep it all in front of you when it's on the wood. You know what I mean? Because you don't want it to fall off midair over top of your head.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So I said, you know, when you're doing that initial swing, or when it's just the axe, you can swing from over your head. And he's got this whole, we did a slow-mo of the video of him doing it. He's got a whole trebuchet motion with his whole body.
When he hits, do his cheeks just jiggle and everything? You know, slow-mo.
Yeah. We did it slow-mo.
That's amazing.
But it was a night, we had a nice, you know, on a side angle, nice profile shot of him doing it. And his whole head and body come through and his arms follow. And then his axe swings later at the end. And it just looks like this beautiful trebuchet coming down on it.
That's funny.
And, you know, he's a 11-year-old little guy, you know? And
yeah.
So he's really getting into it and he's learning how to use it like an axe and really, you know, like lay into the wood. So we're having a lot of fun. And
it's all in the form, man. It's all in the form.
And after 10 to 20 minutes, he's like, he's winded. And you know what I mean? He's been like going to town on this and he doesn't even know. But we have the green can nearby. And that's where you go to stand when you're not doing the axing, when you're not the one wielding the axe. So we take turns standing behind the green can.
Yeah, you don't want to get hit.
And there's been a couple of times where the wood flies so hard and fast, and it just dings off that can. And he's like, thank God I'm standing behind this green can.
Next thing you know, you guys are going to get into like axe throwing and...
Oh, that's what he said today. He said today, he's like, do you think we could get a target? I was like, we are not throwing this axe.
That would be amazing.
Mommy got hit twice this week by flying wood. You think she's going to look out the back window?
As you go back, you lose it. And the axe goes backwards instead of forwards, you know, like a Three Stooges comedy skit.
Yeah, yeah. So that was the majority of the week, a lot of axing. And then during lunch, he's like, you know, I'm working and he comes out at lunchtime and I hear him running down the stairs and he's like, you want to throw the axe a little bit? And so we do it like now two or three times a day. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And you're getting your split wood accomplished.
That's right. And then we celebrated Audrey's birthday last weekend.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Happy birthday to Audrey.
Yeah, and she got, as one of her gifts, Mrs. Maisel's Life, Game of Life.
So it's the Game of Life Mrs. Maisel themed?
It's branded, yeah, it's branded and themed, and all the cards are changed to things that would happen to Mrs. Maisel.
Oh, that's cool.
So she just watched finished the seasons? I think she's almost caught up. She at least watched a couple of seasons.
Yeah, you were telling me about it a few weeks ago. So yeah, that's very cool.
We played that one time this week. And I forget playing Life. I don't think I've played Life as much as I paid.
Very prescriptive. You do this or you do that. You have no other right. choice outside of those two things.
And I think it's so funny. The fact that it layers this game of chance on top of a game of chance and on top of the cards, and was just getting pummeled by the Life cards. And I was like, oh, it's so awful. Like right out the box, she was getting like, you know, you're
divorced.
You bombed at the so-and-so show and you're going to pay $60,000 or something like that. And we were like, you didn't even have a chance to make anybody, you know? No.
That's hilarious. She's already getting fined. Like she's in debtor's prison.
Exactly. But it was a fun game. It was fun to sit down and play a board game with the fam.
Exactly. Yeah, I always like that too. We do some games now and again, and just, you know, it gives you that time together and do things, and, you know, just kind of takes your mind off of the stuff that goes on in the world, and you could just sit there and roll dice and count squares.
Right.
You know, a racing game that they are. Very cool. All right, man. So, Moxie.
Yes, sir.
Speaking of teenage girl angst, you know, punk rocker girl power movie.
Yes, yes.
That's the way I would describe it.
Punk rocker girl power. Punk rock girl power. That's almost a three-word review.
Punk rock.
Punk rock is one word, right? Hyphenated, maybe?
Okay, sure.
Punk rock girl power.
Well, if you hyphenate the whole thing, it's one word. But what I love, though, the best part of the whole trailer.
What's that?
At 38 seconds, you have the girl sitting in the administrator's office talking about being harassed.
Uh-huh.
And she said, you know, we don't use those words around here because then I got to do a bunch of stuff. And I could not help but laugh. Working in a high school myself, when kids tell me things, I tell them, like, are you sure you wanted to word it that way? Or is there a better way to say what you're trying to tell me? Because if we do that, then we got to go down a whole other path where we got to do a bunch of stuff.
Do you see the stack?
I tell them almost identical. I'm like, because if you stick with what you're telling me and you're sincere about it, we got to go down this whole other path over here, and it's just a bunch of stuff. And then the kids are like, maybe I don't mean it that way. But that was so funny, though, because it is so true. It is so true, you know? Like, a kid makes some passing...
off the cuff, yeah.
Yeah, some transient remark that's irrelevant, and you're like, are you sure? That was pretty funny. Otherwise, I mean, you have a daughter who's in high school now. I work in a high school. It doesn't, you know, before you get to what your thoughts are there, my thoughts are, just from what I see, I mean, obviously, I'm not like in the thick of the social stuff with the kids, but I see them on campus interacting and everything. And it looks very written. Like these conversations, I think they're too quick. They're too witty.
Yeah.
You know, they're too snarky. I don't see them happening in most kids' conversations.
Yeah, I think it's about a compression, right? Like, I think there's tons of witty things that happen in your life and in the life of teens especially, and the witty things are the things you remember. So when you piece it together, it does seem farcical that it's almost implausible, improbable that it could happen that way.
Right.
But, you know, it's both the things. It's one thing of an active mind and the memorable things that you have. And then also, as a writer, and I don't prescribe to be a writer, but I have tried to write some things. it is such a cathartic thing to think about a time in your life when you weren't empowered or you didn't come up with a comeback. And that's like 50% of the reason to write anything down, is to be like, oh, you know what would have been a great comeback for that? Let me write that down, and I'll make sure that when I make the movie of my life, that I actually say that to that.
Like when you go home after some confrontation at work, and, you know, you're just complaining to Anne, and you're telling her all the things you would love to have said, but, you know, either you didn't think about it, or you weren't brave enough, or both.
Right. Or you wanted to keep your job.
Well, that's what I mean when I say brave enough. Yeah. But, you know, you had it in your head, you know. And,
right.
Yeah. I mean, the demographic, I would say, is definitely high school kids, more specifically high school girls, maybe, you know, early 20-somethings. I would say is their primary demographic.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I watch these movies to just kind of be in the know with what the kids at work are doing.
Uh-huh.
And then other times I don't watch them because I don't want to know what the kids at work are doing or what they're thinking. It's like, I just show up and I just do my thing and I'm who I am. And
you're like, you just deal with the window that you're given by the people in front of you, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So, but I would imagine, though, with Audrey as the newly christened 15-year-old.
Yes.
You guys would be watching and getting into this movie space.
Yes, I will watch it. Audrey probably will watch it. Her movie taste is like, it's a little aged up, you know. She wants to watch older things.
Oh, so you think this is not in her wheelhouse?
No, I think this will be in her wheelhouse. Oh, okay. Because I think it's something that after we watch it, we might be able to show this to the family because it's a PG-13.
Right.
And I think Amy Poehler, and she kind of comes from a place where I feel like she's more accessible and maybe a little bit safe. So I'm hoping for like a Mean Girls revival. I'm hoping this is something like Mean Girls was back in the day, you know?
Oh, you're looking at that angle.
Yeah, I think there's a school angle that, you know, that has maybe a little more righteousness, a little more in the moment. You know, Mean Girls was about the materialism and the queen bee wannabe of the time.
Oh, that's funny you said that. I was just thinking of that. Queen bees and wannabes.
A great book that we were told we had to read with a girl growing up, you know. And,
right.
And now this feels like it's for the newer generation, and maybe it'll hit closer to home for Audrey and them.
See, I didn't get the Mean Girls bullying side of it. What I was thinking more is it's more along the lines of, how would you say it? Like, girls being patronized in school and being talked down to maybe by teachers or boys or something.
Right.
And, you know, you hear the things and you witness the things about girls aren't good at math. So then it's kind of like a self-serving prophecy that, oh, girls aren't good at math, so therefore I'm not going to be good at math. Or if you're seen as too smart, then and you're like smarter than the boys or something,
yeah,
then all of a sudden it's one of those scenarios or situations where then you're not seen as cute anymore or something. And girls want to have that sort of persona as, you know, I'm cute and flirty rather than studious and bookwormy or something.
Right, right.
So, and I think it's like a breakout of that stereotype of we need to be cute and flirty, and not necessarily breaking out of that stereotype into a stereotype of academics, but maybe into a stereotype of, you know, kind of the, I don't know, I'm here, I'm loud, and you can't like tell me no.
Right. And I think for me, at the Mean Girls, it wasn't that these girls in this movie are mean girls. I think it was more of the defining a generation and showing what this generation has to offer. I really think that, you know, Audrey and her girlfriends and her friends, they have this social conscious thing about like gender equality and gender. What's the one with the not gender neutrality. What's the one that I'm thinking of? Gender fluidity, that kind of stuff. And just like, so you said your favorite moment's the moment when the counselor talks about that. My 100% favorite moment, because I feel this all the time, is when the boy at the end opens the door for her. And he's like, if I can open it for, I don't know if I'm allowed to do that still. Because I swear, constantly throughout the day, anytime I'm being nice, I feel like, oh, am I being nice or am I patronizing?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to patronize anybody, but maybe being nice if I'm, you know, if I'm forcing myself not to be passive aggressive, you know, then I follow that.
There's a fine line nowadays between being a gentleman and being sexist.
Uh-huh.
It's like you have to read your audience, right?
Oh, God. When you say read your audience, it's like read your audience minute by minute. It's like you can't just walk in a room.
Oh, it's cognitively exhausting. You know, it's one of those things. So like you could, if you have like a super high demanding job physically, right? Like, I mean, you're just a crazy, you know, you're just doing concrete like 15 hours a day. You just come home. You're just thrashed physically, right?
Right.
If you have a super high demanding job cognitively, like you're making like life and death decisions on the moment for 15 hours, like you're just cognitively drained and wiped out. And sometimes, depending on where you're working, who you're working with, what you're doing, who the people are, all this stuff, cognitively it just drains you because you're always wondering, am I doing this right?
Right.
Am I offending anybody? I don't mean to offend anybody. All I want to do is just be me, but sometimes I can't be me because people just get offended when I'm me, you know? And all I did was say hi. But maybe I said hi and I gave like a two-finger wave, you know, like peace, but they wanted a full open palm wave and I offended somebody, you know?
Right.
I mean, it's like, it's ridiculous.
I know. I always say hi, guys. I say hi, guys. And to me, from the East Coast, hi, guys.
That's kind of Chicago too, right?
Guys is, yeah, I mean, guys.
Guys is like a group.
Unisex term, right?
Right,
unisex
right.
Term. It's not, it doesn't mean men. I'm not saying hi, men.
It's not gender specific. Yeah, it's like y'all.
But now I'm told that it is gender specific. I'm told I can't say that.
But it depends on where in the nation you're from, right? So like if you say, hey, y'all, like because you're from Texas, for example.
Right.
Well, you might say, you know, it's you all. If you're from Pittsburgh, yins.
Yins. Ooh, that's a nice one.
Yeah, you ones. Yins.
Yins. I'm going to use that now.
Yins going downtown for an imp and urn. Now all the Pittsburgh listeners are like, oh, yeah, I like this guy.
Unless he's making fun of us, I can't tell.
No, I worked in Pittsburgh for a number of months and just picked up some Pittsburghese, as they call it. You know, it's just kind of funny, actually. But you're right, though. I mean, guys, like, hey guys, or what's up guys, or
yeah,
you know, it's those guys over there, you know, it's like,
right,
guys get sometimes, depending on, again, knowing your audience, I'll say, right, guys and gals,
right,
you know, I'm like, yeah, it's the guys and gals or something, because I know, like, of the 10 people, one's gonna get offended and one's gonna go complain, and that's the last thing I need, you know. But
I type guys and then I delete guys and I write all. So hi all.
All right, so speaking of guys and gals, but a specific guy, the courier.
Okay.
I love Cloak and Dagger movies.
Oh, this one looks so much fun.
Doesn't it though?
Like it looks like Cumberbatch is just like, it's Cloak and Dagger, but he's like a fish out of water. It's like,
he can't even do a push-up.
Do
okay, or he does, or he's doing what I do to Clarissa.
Yeah,
I'll be doing, like, say we're doing like squats or something, you know, I pick up the bar and she says, oh, I have to go to the bathroom, I'll be right back. So she comes back, and then I like, I'm only doing five, and then on my fifth rep, I'm like
20.
I'm like 22. So maybe that's where the push-up scene was. That was like his 100th push-up, but I have a feeling it's not.
No, not at all. Not at all.
I think he's playing it off like he's a wimpy guy or something.
Well, I think he is a wimpy guy, and I think that the trailer does a great character study of who this character is. No one listens to him. No one knows he's there. He's going through life. He's trying to be the salesman, you know? And not even his wife listens to what his requests, you know?
That's so funny you say that, because I said, like, we mostly know the macro story.
Yeah.
I mean, the macro story is 1960s Cold War.
Right.
And you hear Kennedy in the background talking about the nuclear weapons. You see the U-2 bomber, not the U-2 bomber, I'm sorry, the U-2 spy plane.
Spy plane, yeah.
Over Cuba when they're looking for the missile silos and all that stuff. The
missiles, yeah.
But it tells it through the lens of this micro story.
Right.
So you have the overarching theme is the Cold War of the 1960s and that macro story. But like you mentioned, though, it's the micro of Cumberbatch and his insignificance,
right,
that turns to being quite significant.
Exactly.
And it's going to be funny to watch it play out, because he doesn't know how to handle people not listening. And then all of a sudden, everyone wants to listen. Well, yeah, I guess everybody, too. I mean, even he goes to, you know, he goes to Russia, assuming everyone's KGB and they're all listening to him because they want to know, what is this guy talking about, so we can spy on him.
Right.
He's spying on them. So everybody wants. So it's like nobody listens to everybody listens.
And it's really fun because it's got, you know, it's got all the era pieces and the stage, it's directed very cleanly. You know, I love that they had the planes of the time, you know?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Like that jetliner is.
What do you think they're going to have? A 757 or whatever the. A 777.
But they spent some time in the trailer showing it to us.
Yeah, so I know what you mean.
That's what I like. But then we also get, you know, by the end of the trailer, we know that he's a stand-up guy. You know, he's standing up for his, you know, his spy counterpart that he's getting the information from.
Right.
And you know, the agents and, you know, again, since we had Rachel Brosnahan, how do you say her name? Brosnahan? Brosnahan? Anyway, Mrs. Maisel. We have Mrs. Maisel in here.
Mrs. Maisel.
And she's the, you know, the American counterpart. And then there's, you know, MI6 or whatever they are. So they're all trying to convince him to just be like, just burn it, burn the bridge behind you. You know, you're got to get out of there, you know? And he's trying to do the right thing. He's trying to save his Russian counterpart who's helping him out.
Well, and I think just because people insignificantly don't listen to you doesn't mean you're a wimp,
right,
necessarily. I mean, you could still have your morals and values about you. It's just people ignore you. My last thought about the courier, I like the slightly muted color palette.
Oh, yeah, beautiful.
Because it looks good, and it I don't know why, but if it was brighter, it would feel too modern, and it wouldn't feel like 1960. But for some reason, they have to make it look like an old 35mm slide film or something.
I mean, it fits the style and the genre of this piece. piece, you know. I would say of the time frame, the similar time frame is Catch Me If You Can, I believe. And that has a vibrancy to it. It has, you know, Leo and his very bright colors, and he's an over-the-top character. And I think the muted tones goes with his muted character as far as...
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
Talking about Cumberbatch, you know? So it kind of, it all melts into this, you know, this beige of... muted everything, which will allow it to pop when it needs to pop. I think the things like it was more noticeable when he was standing up for himself and his friend, you know, because this whole time he had been walked over and, you know, taken advantage of and taken for granted, you know?
Yeah. I mean, overall, I definitely want to watch this. It looks great. Like I said, I mean, Cloak and Dagger movies are some of my favorites, you know, because they're spy espionage. It's not like James Bond with all the gadgets, but they have enough gadgets, like the little lapel pin.
And he's even like, what does this do? Sharpshoot darts out of it.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of makes fun of it and stuff. And so it's like kind of gadgety. And, you know, and they have like the shaving cream can, whatever that's going on with and stuff. So you do get some of that 1960s spy, I don't even know, like the spy tchotchkes,
yeah. Spy tropes, yeah.
It's all around a good looking story, and I think it's gonna keep you just riveted and on point, you know.
And I think it harkens back to early Bond. I think Bond before
I was thinking that too.
Action-y. Yeah, before it got action-y, it was more Taylor, Tinker, Soldier, Spy kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't so much like an explosion movie like the newer Bonds. It was more just, you know, a guy who was...
Can you outwit?
Yeah, a guy who was like dashing and, you know, he won conversations and battles with a look kind of a thing. And
right, exactly.
Yeah, you know, and in his tuxedo at the craps table in Monaco or something. I mean, like, I just love that. I love that. All right, man, last one for tonight, Crisis.
Yes.
So I didn't know what it was going into it.
And the title's not too good at describing it either, right? Like,
well, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
And, you know, Crisis. My first thought was there's this video game Crisis. But though I think it's spelled different, I'm not even sure. But and then I'm like, okay, Crisis. Because I try to think about, like, what could this be?
Of course.
And I'm like, I have no idea, but there's something in Crisis. But then when they were talking about the opiate crisis, it's like become self-evident at that point.
Right.
Awesome acting core.
The cast is insane.
The cast is, it's outrageous. Yeah, I mean, watch it for the cast alone, I think.
Right.
I like how we just covered the courier,
uh-huh,
and they make mention to the drug courier.
That's right. And that's not the only, but so these two, Moxie's a little bit of an outlier, but
there's a theme for sure.
But what was the courier's topic of the world? Was the Cuban Missile?
Wait, you're talking about the movie The Courier or The Courier in the Crisis?
In the movie The Courier.
Oh, the Cuban Missile Crisis. Yeah.
Crisis. So,
yeah,
so
right.
Crisis full circle. So Cuban Missile Crisis. And then in The Crisis, they talk about the courier of the drugs.
Exactly. Yeah. I picked up on the same, you know, and and I was even thinking, I'm like, do we drop Moxie to keep this cool theme going? You know, but I was like, we'll just go with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I get the sense that the courier is working for the DEA to expose the Northlight billion-dollar drug, or to try and expose it to get their billion-dollar drug off the market or something, and that the guy who gets caught at the border is actually working for the DEA?
Yeah, that seems like it could be that complicated.
There's some weird twist to the movie, is the way the trailer leads into.
If not one, many. Like, you know, it feels like this is layers upon layers.
Exactly. It leaves it ambiguous enough. But you know this thing's going to be full of twists that are going to just, like, who's taking who down? And is it the government taking the corporation down? The corporation exposing the government for its injustices? You know, I see a lot of different twists and turns that are going to probably expose every side, every entity for, you know, mayhem.
So Gary Oldman, Armie Hammer, Evangeline Lilly, you know, these are just the tip of the iceberg on who's who of going there.
Oh, yeah. The acting chops of this group is outrageous. Like I said, you watch it for the acting alone. So here's kind of a moral dilemma question maybe for yourself.
Uh-huh.
So if you had access to a non-addictive opiate, you know, I don't know, Percocets or something, although I think those have acetaminophen in them, but you know, anyway, but maybe there were claims that there were no physical side effects like to your liver or kidneys. Would you be more likely, less likely, or just as likely as you are now to you know, pop the pills for like minor aches and pains and everything else you got going? Or would you just deal with what you got and be done?
I think we're a family of deal with what you got kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, I'm kind of that bit, that part too. I mean,
I think Anne's more than me. Like, I'll take a Tylenol here and there, you know, Advil we have in the house mainly for headaches. You know, I think that's about it. And a headache is usually, I usually say like, a headache, why am I having a headache? Oh, I need to drink more water. Oh, I haven't had my coffee today. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
address the symptom or address the cause.
Right, exactly.
Right? I mean, if you're just going to mask the symptom and still be dehydrated, well, that's no good. And that goes to my thoughts. I mean, you could take a pill that makes you feel like, you know, Godzilla, and then, you know, pop all these pills and then go do whatever when you have a backache.
Right.
Or you could just have the backache and take it a little bit easy that day. And I think pain's there for a reason.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, football players. You know, we have the Super Bowl coming up. So you have football players. So you can inject them with cortisone and all these painkillers and go out there and keep.
And we know they do.
Well, yeah, no. And then all you're doing is thrashing your knees and your joints and everything because you're not letting the inflammation calm down.
Right.
You're just masking the pain through drugs. So I don't know. Pain has a purpose.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, even just this week when we talked about, you know, starting this wood chopping.
Swinging the axe.
I was like, on Monday, on Tuesday, I woke up and I was like, my back is killing me. I was like, all right, today, Bryce, you're going to do the lion's share of the axe throwing, you know? And I just...
Dad's getting old.
I took it easy on Tuesday. And by Wednesday, I was ready to go again. And I was like, you know, I needed to build those muscles. And my body was telling me that the back was, you know, tweaked a little bit. And I need to watch my swing, make sure it's a nice even swing, you know? So I think, like you said...
Yeah, pain has a purpose.
Pain has a purpose. And because I do not make millions of dollars by swinging this axe, there's no reason for me to play through.
You're not making
pain.
3.2. Bryce, go get the injectables. So, Crisis, I mean, the acting core is huge. You're going to watch.
And it's refreshing. Come on. I mean, how many drug movies have we made with Mexico and South America? Let's make a drug movie with Canada.
With Canada.
Right? Let's do it.
Totally.
The snowy border of Canada.
You know, it's funny. Whenever you watch like anything with smuggling, uh-huh. Mexico or the southern border, or, you know, coming across like boats or anywhere from like Bolivia or any of that stuff, right? Central America.
Right, right.
It's always like cocaine or, you know... Mostly cocaine, I guess.
Yeah.
And anytime you watch anything about smuggling or prohibition, it's always whiskey.
Right,
like Canadian rye, you know what I mean? And it's like, it's never drugs from one and it's never whiskey from the other. I mean,
right.
Yeah. All right, man. So what we're watching, me and Clarissa watched a number of things this week.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah. How about yourself? Let's go. You know, I like what
we do. Tit for tat. We did tit for tat. It was good.
I like what we did last week. Yeah, that was cool. I like that. Instead of just like you droning on and me droning on, like we could just bounce back and forth like a tennis match.
Okay.
All right. You serve.
Well, I will start. We won't go chronologically, but I will say that a couple nights ago.
Yeah, but nobody would know if you did or not anyway.
Yeah, it's fine. A couple nights ago, Anne was in. We were in bed, and I was playing Monopoly, and Anne was watching something, and I look over, and it's the opening frame of a man and a bicycle, a man with a bicycle on a boat.
Was this the dig?
And I was like, you're watching The Dig? And she goes, yeah, I didn't think, it's not your kind of movie. I don't think you would be into it. I was like, I was waiting for you to see The Dig. Like,
Episode 141.
You saw The Dig this week too.
We watched it last night out of chronological order.
So what did you think? Did you love it or did you, how'd you find it?
I really enjoyed it. The last act was slow.
Well, the whole thing is slow.
The whole thing's slow.
But it's purposeful. It has things going on. It has action. It has, emotionally driven acts. And they're the first two, like you said. The last act is slow and it doesn't really...
The thing about the last act was the story moved a little bit slow, but the music, oh man, it was lulling me to sleep, man. I'm just like... They have got to do something. The other thing about it, too, was, I mean, I felt like some of the people were talking with marbles in their mouth. Had to put on subtitles.
Oh, we had to turn them off because we were just like, we just wanted to suffer through it.
No, we turned on subtitles, man. I thought it was a great movie.
I love their use of the frame, and it not since the first season of Mr. Robot have I seen such an oppressive frame with such a small characters and just like...
Maybe that's why I liked it so much.
It's just visually stunning, and it spent the time when he's sitting on the bank of the water bog or whatever it was, and the little...
As the boat sails past?
As the boat's coming by, I was like, ah... It's just nice to get that pace, you know? Like that was super slow, but it was purposeful and the first two acts are meditations on scenes and on scenery.
Yeah, I agree.
And the last act, Anne was like, "You said you wanted to watch this movie." And I was like, "What? Was I sleeping?" Like she totally caught me sleeping like two or three times.
I was struggling at the end, and there were a few times where I'm like, I'd wake up and I'm like, I would ask Clarissa some question, you know? And finally at the end though, I'm like, so did it make it in the museum? She's like, no, they buried it back. I'm like,
yeah, they just covered it up.
I'm like, yeah, I saw that. You know, oh God, like I said, the music at the end was just crushing me.
Yeah.
You know, not to mention I had like four beers, you know, but okay. So The Dig we both kind of covered. I'll jump since you started. I'll jump to the next.
Let me have.
Okay. Go ahead.
I got two things about The Dig. The Dig, just to get nitpicky a bit. As the title sequence at the credit sequence came up, I looked at Anne and I said, I woke up enough for the titles to say, do these titles go with this movie? Because it is this sans serif. Take another look at the title sequence at the credit sequence.
Okay, I will again.
The credit sequence is just so modern, and this movie's from whatever, World War whatever. It needs a serif font. It needs something. It can't use this modern, you know, sans serif fonts as their titles. You know, just a Times Roman, just something simple. Just don't overdo it with that. And then the minute that the couple...
Yeah, okay.
The minute the couple of archaeologists come in and he says hello to that other archaeologist and they're...
From the museum, you're saying.
From the museum. And they're saying they're hiring each other. I was like, those two guys are gay. Like, they're gay for each other, you know? And Anne's first reaction was like... I think she just thought I was like being a chauvinist or being like overly sensitive. I was like, nope, my gaydar is on and they are all about it. And then like something happened, you know, 10, 15 minutes later. And she goes, how'd you know? And I was like, because it was like very clear that he wasn't into his hot, beautiful wife. He was supposed to go on vacation with his hot, beautiful wife.
Right,
and yet
right.
He took her to her into his boyfriend's dig somewhere, you know.
Well, and I think the wife knew too because she was.
Oh, she knew.
Yeah, she was like, yeah, he's not
in the saddest way.
he's not throwing it my way. I better go find some other guy to control it my way. You're right about that, though. I picked up on it like instantly. And then he's like, which bed would you like? I mean,
I'd push these two beds together if I'm.
I told Clarissa, I'd said we'd bang on your bed and I'd sleep on mine.
It happened to us in Prague. When we were in Prague, we were given a room with two singles. And I was like, get this nightstand out of the middle and we'll push these beds together.
Yeah, it ain't rocket science. You know what I'm saying? It ain't rocket science. So moving on to episode 143. So the dig was episode 141. We talked about that trailer. Episode 143, we talked about Outside the Wire. Have you seen that?
Oh, yes, I did see that.
Yeah, that was good.
I liked it a lot.
The title is a double entendre.
Okay. Tell me how.
They're outside the wire is the obvious, right? So that's, you know, the razor wire, the concertina wire. They're outside that. They're out into the enemy zone, whatever.
Right.
And then when he removes the GPS tracker
in his neck or whatever
from his back, yeah.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, that's when the AI went outside the wire.
His own wire.
Yeah. So then he started doing his thing, you know. But very good. I think it's just another one of those AI goes rogue movies, but they did it in a cool way. I mean, we've talked about this in the past with, you know, DARPA working on like robot soldiers and all that kind of stuff. And it's kind of like, there they are, you know, and it's, wow, I don't know what to think of that because, you know, they're not that far off.
Right.
We're not saying we're going to send in a robot army and people won't be involved. I think it's going to be like they showed. There's going to be the robot army.
What do they call those? Goons?
I don't even remember, but there's going to be the robot soldiers, but they're going to be fighting alongside, you know, like meat soldiers.
Meat soldiers, yeah. Yeah. But I loved, so the thing that I liked about it, the thought process I went through was the character, I forgot their names. I watched this like 2-3 weeks ago.
I don't remember either.
But you know.
Oh, but Bodhi or Buddy or whatever. I don't know. Al.
I'm just going to say the AI guy and then the
non-AI guy.
The drone pilot.
The drone pilot.
The drone pilot and the AI guy. So what should we call? We should just call him Falcon. Let's just call him his Marvel name.
I love that. You know what's funny? As we're watching it, I kept calling him Falcon. I'm like, oh, wow, Falcon's doing this now or whatever, you know? And
so when Falcon is the AI, I love that he scrubs through the personnel, right? And when this guy sets off his AI brain to say, like, I need somebody that can break the rules. Let me get this guy. I can, you know, I can request things. I have a higher clearance, you know?
He is the clearance.
I need a drone pilot. Yeah, I need a drone pilot that can break rules because I'm a drone basically who needs a human handler that can set me free the way that, you know, he kind of took all the emotion out of the decision and said, I told you to clear the area, you didn't clear the area, I'm sending in the missiles off the drone. So it was interesting to me that he reverse engineered his own freedom through finding the right person, the right human to do it. You know, he needed to find just the right human to do it. And he needed to program that human, reverse program that human through the exposure that he had given to him by saying, like, look, an orphanage. Look, this wonderful woman we're helping. Look at all the things I've done. And in the end, it was all to serve his own freedom, you know, like. It, like you said, it was very well done.
The choreography of the fight scenes, you know, like the fist fight scenes was outrageous. I mean, it was, I always feel like they film them, they just kind of walk through slowly and then speed up the film to make it look like they're fighting or something. Because
right.
How are you that good at the choreography to do that in a take or something? I mean, it's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. What else you got?
Okay. So here's a guilty pleasure that I finished up this week.
Oh, Ted Lasso.
I thank you for reminding me. I've only watched it 5 times. I should revisit that.
Oh God.
No. So LA's Finest. Have you heard of this show?
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it.
So LA's Finest. It was 2 years ago, 3 years ago. I was in the gym. You know, remember the gym when you could go to the gym?
I'm familiar. Yes.
So I was in the gym on a treadmill, something you're not familiar with. You hate the treadmill.
The
so.
the squirrel in a cage. No, what do you call it? The gerbil?
The wheel. The
gerbil
wheel.
Hamster wheel. There you go. Hamster wheel.
So I was on the treadmill in the gym a couple years ago, and I saw this ad, this trailer, this TV spot for Jessica Alba and Gabrielle Union in a new cop show. And I was like, oh, yeah. And then it said Spectrum. Only on Spectrum. Spectrum was producing their own TV shows. And I was like, oh, great.
Like Spectrum is in the cable company?
The cable company was producing a Spectrum-only television show.
Wow.
And I was like, great. I'm never going to see that. And the only time I'm ever going to see that is if they play it while I'm here at the gym and I turn on to the gym channel and I listen to it here.
Oh, because you don't have cable.
I don't have cable. I have Spectrum, but only the internet service, you know?
Yeah, like we have Xfinity, but only the internet service, right?
Right. So I'm never going to see it. And then a couple months ago or last month, Netflix bought it or, you know, bought the rights to air it. And it still says a Spectrum production and like Paramount or something like that. But the craziest thing about this series is it's in the world of Bad Boys.
Oh, okay.
So it has John Sally in it. And John Sally, I don't know if you remember John Sally from Bad Boys. He played a hacker.
Wait, didn't John Sally play in the Bulls?
Yeah, he played on the Lakers and the Bulls, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he in the Bad Boys movie, he plays Fletch, a hacker.
Okay.
And like a couple episodes in, one or two episodes in.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right.
They show him in there. And he's like got a bigger role in this. And it's so funny because they're like, he's like.
So they cross over.
They cross over. So this is within the world of Bad Boys.
How many seasons?
It's only one season. And I just finished the one season. I don't know if it's going to have more seasons. They might have just sold it off to recoup some money.
So is it like Bad Boys canon?
It feels like it. Martin Lawrence and Will Smith never show up. But it's fine. It holds up without them. It has the most firefights of any regular TV cop show that you would ever have. Like every episode has like a firefight in it. So it's kind of intense like that. And they have amazing fights and these badass girls. One of the episodes is called Bad Girls. You know what I mean? So, and then...
Bad Girls. One of the episodes is called Moxie.
And then the inside jokes, it's like John Sally says, I have Laker tickets. I know a guy. And Gabrielle Union says back to him, she goes, I'm a Heat fan. I can always get you tickets. I know a guy, because she's married. She's married to Dwayne Wade of the Heat. So she does, you know, they wrote in a couple of nice inside jokes for that. So it's a nice guilty pleasure. I will tell you, as far as like work fodder, it's something nice to have on in the background, because the minute that there's action or something like that, you know, the sound picks up and you can look over there and you're like, Jerry Bruckheimer does not disappoint on the action stuff. What else you got?
Episode 138, The Midnight Sky. So that was the one with George Clooney.
We watched that as a family.
Oh, you did watch it?
Yeah.
Nice little twist at the end there.
Yeah.
So I think they...
Long enough. We can say spoilers and we can talk about it, right?
Yeah. I think the ending implies and promotes incest.
Oh, no.
Well, what? They got to go to the new planet off of Jupiter. The only way they're like, the first thing that me and Clarissa both said almost simultaneously is like, the new Adam and Eve. And then it's their offspring have to procreate. So that's, yeah, you know, so brother and sister will be getting it on to make then cousins and nephews. And but I also felt it was a cross between Arctic Castaway and 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Wait, one more time? Arctic?
Arctic, you know, with Mads Mikkelsen.
Uh-huh.
You didn't see that one.
I did not. You saw it.
I thought you were a Mads fan.
I'm a total Mads fan.
Yeah, you got to watch it. It's great. So Arctic, Castaway, and 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Okay, okay.
So I just had, I had the thought of those three movies, but the twist at the end... I'll kind of leave the spoiler a little ambiguous. Maybe people can read between the lines, but if they haven't seen it, I guess. But the whole time you think this girl is there, and it was
right.
Then you realize the girl was probably his daughter.
Well, let's just pull the whole veil off of this thing. Yes, it's his daughter but it's at the time of the last time that he saw her. And then she is actually in the spaceship coming back to Earth.
Right. What would you say she was? Like 9, 10, something like that?
Yeah, a little younger maybe. Yeah. Yeah, 8, 9.
Yeah, 8 to 9. And then she was piloting the ship coming back at the end.
There were some very far-fetched, too close calls, like when that trailer starts slipping into the ice and he gets out of it or whatever. And I was like, no way, dude.
You don't think he could have gotten out of that?
I don't. Well, I guess so. But his health was compromised. He was not doing well already from the cancer treatments, you know, like, I don't know.
Where did he get the warm clothes from?
Exactly. You know, all of these things.
Yeah.
But it was good. It was, it, you know, I think
you got to suspend belief at some point. I mean,
got to suspend disbelief. Yeah.
You have to suspend belief because the girl was a figment of his imagination the entire time.
Yeah. So one thing about the Midnight Sky that you probably didn't know, that I only found out after the fact, was that our buddy Trailer Junkie for Life, James Edgington, cut that trailer for
Trailer Junkie for Life.
Everybody that's been on the show is a Trailer Junkie for Life.
That's right. That's right.
he cut the trailer and he had fun doing it, but he did say that it was hard to cut it because of the two storylines, you know?
Oh, the spaceship and the Arctic.
The space storyline and the Arctic storyline, you know?
Right, right, right. Yeah, I could see that because you have to bounce back and forth and yet tell a cohesive story within a 2-minute time frame.
That's the caveat that kills you.
Right. You only got 2 minutes.
George Clooney, you got 2 hours to tell the story. Go to town. James, you got 2 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, overall, you know, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was going back to The Dig. I think just like The Dig, it had its slow dialogue moments. Obviously, not as many people, but, you know, then it just became like extremely intense.
Right.
And you're watching and you had those ice blocks blasting into into the spaceship. You don't know what's going to happen. You're thinking it's going to blow through. They're all going to die or whatever. The ice scene, he's going underwater and everything, whatever it was. Right. I mean, there's like super intense stuff going on.
Yes.
You know, and even it's not just that there's two storylines. Yes. It's he in the Arctic and it's his daughter Iris and the crew on the spaceship coming back. And there's like a minor story, a subplot under all that, which is the nuclear war and people evacuating. And in the beginning, they're kind of telling the backstory of why he's alone. So that's a third minor plot. But overall, though, I think I could see from a trailer editing perspective why that would be hard to do.
It's a hard pull.
Hard pull, yeah. All right, you watch anything else?
Well, I watched WandaVision, but I have a feeling you haven't watched any of them.
No, we haven't. We watched, because I told you we were doing all the Star Wars in release order, so we did do...
Yes, that's right.
We watched Star Wars, Empire, Jedi, and last Saturday we watched Phantom Menace.
Oh, nice. Almost there.
So, yeah. You know, the boys liked it, I think. I'm not a huge fan, but... You know, I always feel like, just briefly, I mean, it's an old movie, I'm not going to get into it too much, but I always feel like people like The Phantom Menace and people like some of the other Star Wars movies because it has Star Wars-y stuff in it, not because it's good. That's all I'm going to say about it.
Right, right, right.
But yeah, WandaVision, we haven't. I see it promoted all over Disney Plus.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah, overall, I'm looking forward to it. And you know what? Maybe tomorrow, me and Clarissa will start WandaVision. I don't know.
So here's my tip.
It's what, 5 episodes, right?
It's 5 episodes right now.
Okay.
I think we're getting to a place where producers within the Disney Plus, now again, I'm going to say this, I have no inside information. Producers within the Disney Plus world have found a way, since Mandalorian was huge, right? Mandalorian was
Oh, yeah.
The first number one non-Netflix show. show, a streaming show for forever.
Yeah.
And you know, the twist at the end, or not the twist, but the reveal of Luke at the end just tore at the fabric of audiences' psyches, right? Like, it was just such a mind-blowing moment. Now, we're in episode 5, and there's one of these moments that happens in episode 5 of WandaVision. We're either in the middle or just in the beginning of the second half of the first season, and they are, like, pulling out all the stops. It is like we're at dinner tonight watching it, and the four of us in the family just start screaming at the top of our lungs, you know? And it's just like they have found the emotional buttons to push on their audience, and this...
Okay, you just did it. We're doing it tomorrow. We're starting.
But here, and now here's the caveat. I read the headline to an article because I don't read a lot of articles anymore. but I read a headline, and I think it was Variety or something like that. I'll try to find it because I should read this article. I'm sure it's short because all the articles are short now. But it said, WandaVision is the perfect anti-binging thing to watch.
Now, anti-binging because it's weekly? Is that what they mean, or...?
Because it's weekly, and because they have so many Easter eggs and so many things that are folded into it, they do little commercials during the episode that are topical and
like fictional ads
of the time period. Fictional ads. They point to Stark Industries. They point to like a toaster for Stark Industries that makes a whole 3-course meal. That kind of thing. You know.
Right. What I mean? Right. Right.
But it was like 1950s Stark Industries. You know, like here's a toaster. You put a sleeve in and you pull out a 3-course meal. You know?
Right. Right. I got you.
And then they just ratchet everything up, and it's like, oh, here's these Easter eggs, and Anne and I are looking at each other going like, ugh, I have to know, like, I have to have 1,000 comic books in my attic to know how to get these things. But now we're at episode 5.
Well, really quick, if I can interrupt you.
You can.
If you don't know the Easter eggs, does it detract from the show?
It does not detract.
If you know the Easter eggs, do you think it would enhance your viewing of the show?
100%.
Okay.
And that's what I'm getting to right now. By the 5th episode, the Easter eggs that are in it now are like cinematic universe Easter eggs.
Okay.
And the Easter eggs are like, and my kids weren't getting it. And I was like, you don't understand that this is because of that. And the way they described that, the mess that you made as a housewife, you cleaned up with the paper towels. You know what I mean? I was like, the genius that goes into this writing in this commercial, this throwaway commercial, it's unfolding the psyche of Wanda, you know, the Scarlet Witch. So, you know, it is the best crossover television, what my favorite Snacks Daily friends called schmovies.
Schmovies.
This is a schmovie to match all schmovies. It is going to blend not only the cinematic universe, but the cinematic universe.
So movie, but what's the show part?
Show. It's like a television show and a movie.
Oh, a show movie. I got you. Yeah, schmovie.
But it's not only blending the cinematic universe with the cinematic television universe, but it's also blending in the mutants. And I don't want to go too far into the mutants, but the, you know, a lot of people were up in arms when Scarlet Witch was made by the Infinity Stones instead of being a mutant. And now we got our first, you know, it's a beautiful thing. So you'll catch up, but take your time with it. Like give the episodes. You would probably give the episodes each a day to sink in, you know.
And what are they, about 45 minutes?
They range from 35 to 45 minutes, yeah.
Now, the first 4 episodes, you're looking at Marvel Comics from like 1968 or something for the...
Yeah, exactly.
But for the Easter eggs, I'm saying.
Right.
And then episode 5 brings it into...
4 and 5. 4 and 5 bring it into...
4 and 5, okay. But that brings it into more the modern fold of the Marvel... Yeah, okay, yeah.
The Marvel Cinematic Universe, yeah. You have to know Thor and Ant-Man and, you know what I mean? Like, and Captain Marvel. You know, if you've seen those 3 movies, then you're prepared for episodes 4 and 5.
You know? Okay. And, you know, the funny thing is, so when we're done with all the Star Wars...
The boys want to do them.
The boys want to do all of the Marvel universe, starting with Iron Man. And yeah, now we're going to have to go through all that again. And then when we're done, phase four will start unraveling, you know? And
yes, that's true.
So, okay, really quick. Before I get into this, are you finished with that? Or?
Oh, yes, that
okay,
is it.
Okay, I didn't want to cut you off too soon. But
thank you.
But I guess let's just end with this here. So we are still in the COVID space.
Yes.
We are still in the mostly, if not 100%, non-theatrical space, still in the home viewing space. Phase four is going to be coming out, and clearly all of the Marvel movies, any one of them is, you know, a blockbuster between blockbuster, massive box office smash.
Yeah.
Hundreds of millions of dollars, you know. I mean, they're just enormous, right?
You mean billions of dollars, because
or billions of dollars, whatever.
Because so you get a frame of reference, I was listening to a podcast and they said, Wonder Woman 1984 was such a bomb because it should have made $1 billion at the box office, but obviously with COVID, it didn't. It only made $100 million or something like that. So unlucky.
I wish I was so bad at my job that I made $100 million. So, okay, the first film of phase four, let's say. I don't know what it's going to be. I forget, but.
Black Widow.
Oh, it's Black Widow. That's the first film?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's already been delayed, yeah.
Yeah, no, I know. Well, we covered Black Widow.
Exactly.
And there's going to be others.
Uh-huh.
So phase four begins. They're delaying and stuff. They can't delay indefinite. So they're going to come out eventually, and they're going to come to a home streaming rental model, whatever you want to call it, purchase, buy-in model.
Right.
And you were talking last week, like, is it worth $30 or something? And then you mentioned, if it's worth $30 or not, is it worth me, like, the FOMO that you're going to have from it to not wait, you know, to wait for it to just come into the regular streaming space? Mm-hmm. I don't know what their anticipation is or what their predictions are, like 500 million, you know, or 750 million, a billion, whatever they're expecting at the box office worldwide. If they can't have that, I would assume at a minimum a $30 purchase price.
Yes.
I mean, wouldn't you say, or would you?
I agree. Yeah, I would say 100 wholeheartedly.
Or would you say more?
No, I think $30 is probably their sweet spot. I don't, you know, if you give non-legacy content, and it's so hard to say Mulan was non-legacy, but I don't think Mulan did not have the spoiler availability. So every Friday, Audrey says to us in the morning, she goes, let's try to watch WandaVision as soon as possible because I'm online and I'd like to not have to avoid spoilers from all my friends about WandaVision and all the things that I follow about WandaVision because it's such a spoiler-rich environment. Now, Marvel Cinematic Universe and the Lucasfilm, those films have this spoiler-rich environment where there is a need to see it amongst the first, to be amongst the first to see it. And that...
It releases on a Friday. If you don't watch it by Sunday night, you're just in for spoiler doom.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
What was it? We were talking about The Little Things, the movie we were talking about with Frank.
Yeah.
And we were talking about it at work. And it had been a week, it had been out like over the weekend, and it was Monday or Tuesday, we were talking about it, and some people, and my boss was like, I haven't seen it yet. And I was like, all right, we'll give you a little time on that. It's a one-off, it's nothing, right? We have spoilers, but I can hold back my excitement about sharing them for a week or two. But the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the spoilers within the Marvel Cinematic Universe have been brewing inside the heads of fanboys and all of us. I don't consider myself a fanboy, but maybe I'm on the fringes of it. But it's brewing inside our head for years. So when it gets revealed as canon, and it either reinforces or denies what you thought you were going to get, then you have this, there's a very short shelf life for that excitement. And you just want to share, you want to be able to share that excitement.
Yeah, I gotcha.
So I think that's the thing for me. I think like Black Widow at $30 a pop, while it's out in theaters at the same time, that has a lot more appeal to me than Mulan, which I waited to see and I loved when I finally saw it in Christmas. And then even Raya, I think Raya I'm going to see because I want to see it and it's animated and I think we could play it outside and it would be a good movie for all. But it doesn't have that need to see right away that Marvel, like, I don't want to watch memes unfold for 4 to 6 months while I'm waiting for this to hit the regular, the run-of-the-mill free Disney Plus.
My biggest concern, I think, when you look at a 30, maybe more, I don't know, but say $30 price point in the times of COVID is you have a family of four, or you get a bunch of friends together, you know, four friends or something, and you all watch it together.
Uh-huh.
The more people you have, the price comes down, let's say.
Exactly. Yeah.
You have somebody who lives by themselves. They're home alone. They don't have anybody coming over because of COVID and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They're still paying the $30 price point.
Right.
I mean, you could say it's, you know, four times expensive, more expensive because they don't have the family to share it with or, you know.
Right.
But they still want to watch it like that.
Come over to my house in the backyard. We'll do it.
I understand. I'm just saying that's
I'm literally telling some of my single friends or some of our single friends.
Oh, okay.
Like, come on to the back and just bring a chair and bring your own bottle of wine and you can
kind of like the Hollywood Bowl.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Bring a picnic. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I just think like there's a privilege in there of having more people in your life.
Yes.
When it comes to these higher price streaming things than if you're a single person who doesn't have, you know, they don't have the advantage of having more people in their life. And it's like, it's just more expensive for them to watch these same shows for no other reason than they want to watch it too. They're fans. They just don't want to, you know, they don't have the cost sharing benefit, I guess.
Right. Right. Interesting to think about.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe that's why the prices aren't as high as it would have otherwise. I don't know. Maybe it balances out at some point. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly. You'd have to be a super fanboy all by yourself to want to do it.
I guess so. And maybe it's worth it to you. So,
right.
You know, I guess you got to go sell one of those comic books for a few thousand dollars. Part with one, right?
That's right. Well, just to end the episode, let's remember it is February, which is Black History Month. And I will say that I saw a great panel this week, one of the best panels that I've seen. And there's a woman who I watched her on this panel, and she's sitting next to, when I say next to, her box on the Zoom was next to Bob Iger's, but she wasn't like sitting next to him, but in my screen she was. And I was like, she's a phenomenal businesswoman. Who is this? I don't know who this person is, right? And then she does a little name dropping and she says, don't tell George, my husband, that because he loves Jar Jar Binks. You know what I mean?
Oh, Lucas.
And I was like, oh, this is George Lucas's wife. Like, I did not know.
Huh.
So George Lucas is married to Melody Hobson. And if you look her up, she's now the chairman of the board of Starbucks.
Oh, wow.
And my favorite thing in Wikipedia, when you look up on Wikipedia, there's an out of focus Starbucks cup in the foreground of a picture of her picture within this. But she's this amazing, accomplished, one of the world's 100 most powerful women.
Huh.
And she was an amazing speaker and just like an amazing person. And she's, you know, from Princeton, and she's having one of the buildings that used to be named after Woodrow Wilson is now going to be a Hobson building. So she's going to have a building named after her there. And George was like, how do we get it done? How do we, you know what I mean? How do we put money in this thing to get these things named? And she was like, we never really thought of it. But after she did it, it was an amazing accomplishment that people just came out of the woodworks and said, like, it is a testament to what we need to be doing as far as who we honor in history and who we honor contemporarily. So just so you can know, like, yes, she's married to George Lucas, which is phenomenal for a fanboy of Lucasfilms like you and I, but she is an incredibly accomplished person on her own and just an incredible speaker and somebody that I did not know would brighten my week you know, working at Disney and be able to see her talk with amongst a panel of great people.
Yeah, man, that would have been awesome to watch.
I watched that instead of getting a big salary. So,
and I always wonder, why is it that, you know, Black History Month is always the shortest month of the year? But that joke's been told before. So, all right, man. Well, let's get the flock out of here. So,
all right, talk to you later.
Later, man. Had a good night.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.